Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the Affair Recovery EMS, EMSO, and Affair Recovery Library Call. It is July the 28th, 2014. And we've got several questions today, so let's go ahead and get moving on all of those questions. First, what is the difference between grooming and flirting? Actually, flirting is a form of grooming. Grooming is probably the larger category. Many things fall into the grooming category, such as pimping tenderness, pimping specialness. Those are just terms we tend to use. Sometimes just asking questions, showing a lot of interest, trying hard to meet someone's needs, being the solution rather than trying to point people to the solution. But ultimately, grooming, and I think that last piece says it pretty well, is about trying to meet somebody's needs, showing interest, validation, which may not even be flirting, but flirting is certainly one way that's maybe more direct in grooming, but again, it's an activity that ultimately draws someone towards you, which we would say isn't that helpful. Hopefully that helps you understand some about grooming. Next, Rick, I have a concern. My husband and I attended your EMS weekend last year. He seemed broken and repentant. He left me 7 months prior and filed for divorce. God had worked in his heart and brought him home. While apart, he had been living with his AP. Our counselor suggested I wait at least 3 months before letting him return. EMS was part of that time. I thought we were both committed to working on things in our marriage. Part of that was our sex life. For the majority of our marriage, we struggled with this. I never learned to orgasm, and he felt I was always seeking or always asking him to do something to help me be in the mood or to enjoy it more. Sex was often very brief. I know he was very active sexually with his AP. I found out later that even the night before he returned home, he slept with her. He has now been home a year, and we haven't had sex in 10 months. I am hurt and insecure. I thought we could work on things together. He seems to be content now, the way things are. I have no reason to believe he's been unfaithful since returning home. This was the only affair I know of in 30 years. He's also experienced erectile dysfunction even before the affair. I've tried to explain my need for intimacy, whether I orgasm or not. I miss the closeness we once enjoyed. He would respond with, I need to work on that, but doesn't act on this. I'm trying to work on a relationship in other areas, friendship, finances, etc. We spend time together and have fun. Our kids are grown, and we're pretty much empty nesters. So what do I do? I'm back. Am I to back off and not bringing up again and just trust God to work on his heart? Should I be happy with the 80% that's good, or do I risk rejection and pursue him in this way? Sometimes I wonder why he came home. He says he loves me and wants to grow old with me, but I still feel so insecure and sad. I feel like he took something precious that was ours and gave it away, and I never got it back. I'd appreciate your help. Has to be difficult. I mean, at one level, it sounds like things are going well. At another level, there's a major area that seems to be skipped here. Something I've always believed, and also if you read, you're responsible, as are all of us, for our own orgasms. Our mate is not responsible for our orgasm. I think oftentimes what happens is there's a sense of demand for people who have anorgasmia or even erectile difficulties that somehow their mate needs to be able to do something to make it happen. I guess in a strange way, my first suggestion is for you to work on yourself apart from him completely and get the help you need to address the anorgasmia. I think if you address the anorgasmia and you find that you can be orgasmic, it may create a very, very different scenario for the two of you coming together, because the sense of demand he experiences would probably diminish, and he might even find it more interesting and also, you know, obviously somewhat novel that things are different. Often that sort of personal growth eliminates part of the resistance the other person has. To begin working on that, you might want to see a sex therapist if possible. There's some good books. You might even start with Sex and the Soul of a Woman, Sheet Music. These would be things that you read for yourself, but I'd recommend you see a therapist and learn in terms of learning how to be orgasmic and to determine why that has been an issue. Sometimes it's as simple as just some misunderstandings about how to be orgasmic, and it just takes some discussion and getting over a lot of times the internal resistance or the issues with being able to release. And if you can start there, I do believe it opens up the door, that personal growth on your part opens up the door for the two of you to do something different as you come back together as husband and wife. If you have any other questions on that, please let me know. That is such a great question. And I do know that there's a lot of hope. I've worked with many women, many men in similar situations. And often it starts with individual work before it ever gets to the couple. Again, if that's in place, I suspect he's going to be far more open to trying some different things. Next question. How would someone best determine if they have a sex addiction? Also, do you have any programs that specifically help with that? My husband has somewhat self-diagnosed himself based on what he's learned about it. Any advice for the betrayed, me, who is married to someone who has a sex addiction? I'm really insecure about this aspect of the betrayal. We're currently in the EMSO course. Well, obviously, if someone is dealing with a sex addiction, and that is most definitely something to be addressed, just to make sure the two of you remain safe through the years. There is a very good test that you can actually take online, if I can find it here, that, or you can go to, I guess, the website Faithful and True. Mark Laser will have a link to this particular website that is actually on Patrick Karn's website, which is a test he could take. But if someone believes they're a sex addict, one of the first steps is just simply being able to see it, own it, understand that it's probably there. And, oh, there it is. So it is under www.sexhelp.com. And there's a question there that just says, am I a sex addict? And if you'll take that test, I think it would probably give him a good score. One of the things you would do, I believe, is begin to do some education on sexual addiction. One of the first things I typically have someone read is Out of the Shadows, which was the initial book written about sex addiction by Patrick Karns. If the two of you were talking about things, that is a huge step. In addition, I recommend doing things such as Sex Addicts Anonymous for him, maybe Celebrate Recovery, but to be with other people, other men in recovery who can walk along with him in that process. Something else that is often useful, we have an online course called Hope for Healing. And the Hope for Healing course actually helps the man come up with a lifelong plan to keep him sober. It's a life plan just to make sure he keeps you safe and keeps himself sober for the long run. in terms of other things you might be able to read, well, Harboring Hope will address that some, the Course for Women. In addition, you'll find that there sometimes I'll have people do like Al-Anon groups. I also have them do Celebrate Recovery. Materials on Faithful and True, I think Mark Laser and Debbie Laser have some materials that also address that. And we also have resources in the library about sex addiction. So educating yourself is one of the first things. Your insecurity is your own issue, however, and I think for that, Harboring Hope and understanding is a good option. Understanding basically that it's not about you, understanding and learning to be supportive, but also learning to have your own boundaries. And the two of you have the potential for a great relationship, so don't be discouraged. You may be thinking that there's something wrong with you if he's attracted or if something else is appealing to him. I'm actually writing a newsletter right now that might help you understand a little bit, but I promise you it has nothing to do with you. Sex addiction is a drug addiction, just like cocaine or heroin. Somebody's chasing a drug, not a person. With you, it's a real thing, and it's not about a drug addiction. It's about love. So I hope you, in your own mind, can begin to distinguish between those things. Next question, finding a therapist. How do you find a therapist with infidelity experience? How do you know when you found the right therapist? Do you have suggestions on what you can search for in Google? Also, does it matter if it's a male or female couples therapist? Do men seem to be more responsive to male therapists? Well, first off, I don't think men are necessarily more responsive to male therapists at all. I think Leslie is a great therapist, Leslie Hardy, in our office, and she certainly works with a lot of male sex addicts. I don't think it necessarily has to be a same-sex therapist. You just want somebody that's got some training in sexual addiction and understands something about it. Infidelity therapist, I think that's probably a bit more difficult. I think you can vet therapists out. You can talk to them, ask them what type of training they've done or reading they've done on treating infidelity. If they've got specific training, if they've read specific types of books on the treatment of infidelity, that person is already trying to create a knowledge base of what to do. If they've not done any specific training, I probably would be a bit more skeptical. Because part of the treatment of infidelity in my mind is somewhat counterintuitive. Like I said before, the main thing isn't about addressing marriage problems. The main issue is going to be healing the wound created by the infidelity, then beginning to address the marriage issue. So it's a two-step process. And even knowing how to help a couple stabilize the relationship in that reaction stage after discovery, understanding what type of discovery needs to be there, helping them work toward forgiveness. Those are things that maybe someone would understand that's already done some training with infidelity. But I think the training question is probably the best way you would go to vet that out. Hope that gives you some directions on that one. Next, what is journaling? Some people recommended it to my husband, the unfaithful, as a way of getting his full story out. My husband's resistant because he says he hates writing and it won't be helpful for him. He's never done anything like it before. What is it for someone who's never done it before? So journaling is really a process where you kind of work through feelings or thoughts. And like I tell people all the time that basically I'm just a living journal. In fact, if someone comes in and they say, would I be able, you know, will you tell me what my mate told you? And I would always say I would never do that, partially because of confidentiality, but even more importantly because what they just told me isn't really true. And they'd say, well, why are they seeing you if they're not telling you the truth? And I'll just say, well, journaling is that process by which we work through our thoughts to get down to what is the truth. And if I told you what they had just said, they're not even at that place tomorrow, but then it would begin in your mind to define how they actually are and what they actually think, which is why it's so dangerous to read someone's journaling. So journaling really to me is the process that we go through in terms of flowing through our thoughts, our emotions, getting it out so we can gain perspective and look at it. I don't necessarily agree with the person that recommends your husband do journaling. That probably wouldn't be that helpful for him. In SAA and other things, A Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps, for instance, has a great process for writing a first step, getting one's sexual history. He would actually fare better by having specific questions to answer, a guided process to take him through that. And if it were possible for him to get involved with something like SAA, Sex Alcoholics, or SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, those programs have a great process for helping people get down to the core to do that journaling, discovery in ultimately writing that first step history. And it's very supportive. Not sure if he would do something like that, but I do believe it's something that would be helpful if indeed he's a sex addict. Here's our last question. Do you recommend Sexaholics, SA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, or Sexaholics for anyone who's been watching porn? My husband's been watching it for at least the past 7 years, but says he's not addicted to it, and that if we were having sex every day or every other day, he wouldn't need to see porn. Does that make sense? Is there anything else he can go to besides Sexaholics? Also, for the period of time between D-Day and finding a place of safety, do you have any suggestions for resuming intimacy? How could you resume intimacy when you feel like your spouse really isn't doing anything they can be doing to help your healing? I listened to John and Leslie's audio of resuming intimacy, but my husband and I are not there yet in terms of me feeling safe or him feeling respect toward women as God created us. How long is reasonable for an expectation of celibacy for the unfaithful husband in terms of days, weeks, or months? So I don't know whether somebody who's been watching porn is a sex addict. I know people, like people who drink. All people who drink aren't necessarily alcoholics. I'm not trying to say that it's healthy behavior. I'm just saying I'm not sure if it determines whether somebody's an addict. And hang on just a second. There is a website you might want to go to. It's called www.sexhelp.com, and it has a button that says, am I a sex addict? Certainly, that would be a place to start if he wants to explore that. It would probably let him know. Whether someone's an addict or not really has to do with whether they've tried to stop and have been unable to stop. It deals with that compulsion in like AA. We would say that one drink is too many, 20 is not enough. The problem isn't stopping. The problem is if you start again, it's controlling it later. Once it gets going, it goes out of control. I've got a lot of people who've had an issue with porn when they finally decided to stop, or have used it when they decided it was wrong and quit using it. It was not even a problem for them. I would disagree slightly with one thing. you reported your husband saying, which is if you would have sex frequently enough, then there wouldn't be a need for porn. I'm not quite sure if that's true or not, only because it would seem to me he's replacing the porn with you. And I think that marital sex should be different than the sex that you think about in porn, that ultimately it's supposed to be about love with you. And I also know that a lot of people, if they're addicts, they could have sex with their wife three times a day and still end up using the porn, that's not the solution. In terms of celibacy, I guess my question is, who wants the celibacy? And why do you want the celibacy? If it is an addiction, if he's in a program like SA, I think they would normally recommend something like 90 days of celibacy with no masturbation, no pornography, in an attempt to kind of figure out what's being pushed down there. But on the other hand, if he's not a sex addict and he's just been looking at porn, I would say your physical intimacy could start back anytime you want. What I wouldn't recommend is using sex as a tool to try to teach your mate a lesson or to try to fix them. If you feel uncomfortable and inadequate personally, then that's one issue. But if you're using it as a way of teaching your mate not to do it or as a boundary, well, if you're using it as a boundary to protect yourself, that's fine. If you're using it as a consequence to him, that is not. Sometimes if someone's been looking at porn, it has a huge impact on how they see themselves. I'm only guessing here, but if that's the case, part of that's also maybe some of your individual work, figuring out that you really are okay. Sex and the Soul of a Woman by, Paula Reinhart. Some things like that I think are good in terms of how recreating how you see you. But whenever you're ready, whenever you feel that draw toward him, there's certainly nothing wrong with being sexual with him. To make that happen, part of what you may need to focus on are the things that are positive about him. If you just stay focused on the negative aspects, I think you'll find it much more difficult to find any sort of appeal. And part of that is your choice, changing the lens through which you see him, because I'm sure there are a lot of good things about him. Right now it's a season where the two of you are beginning to grow up. Okay, one last suggestion. There's also a book by Pinner and Pinner called Restoring the Pleasure, and that book has a series of sexual retraining exercises, sometimes with couples where there's this sort of disconnect and there's confusion over really what it's all about. It's a great process for a husband and wife to go through to learn new ways of being sexual, and it just helps with sexual education. So kind of creating something new that's special between the two of you, that may also be a solution, and that book is a good resource to make that occur. That's all of our questions today. I want to thank everybody for joining the call, and I look forward to speaking with you guys next week. I hope you do have a good week. The healing.